Okay, we're starting here on the top of Nun Hey Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the question that we raised before with regards to Tumat Eretz Amim. What is the status of Tumat Eretz Amim? Is it Mishum Avira Gazruala? Does it have to do with the airspace? Or is it Mishum Gusha Gazruala? Or is it because of the ground itself? Yesterday we discussed the differing reasons that might actually contribute to that difference. Whether you believe it was to prevent people from going into Chutz La'aretz, or was there really an issue of Tumah that might have been there in Chutz La'aretz? And then we also spoke about the difference between Tumat Avir, according to different Rishonim, as to whether it's really just an extension of Tumat Amet, or it's a totally new Gzeira completely, or whether, according to the Balei Tosafot, that there is Tumat Ohel, even Begush, and there's Tumat Ohel Bavir, it says that Avir is a super type of Tumah. So we have those differences that we discussed yesterday. The Gemara now wants to suggest, Leima Kitanae. Let us say that this machloket about whether it's Avir and Gush reflects a similar machloket Tanaim where we find somewhere else, which is a Nichnas Eretz Amim, Bishida Tevau Migdal. Person who enters into Eretz Amim in this fashion where he is basically surrounded, encompassed, enclosed by these items, whether it's a chest, it's some sort of amwar, however it is that he entered in there. Rebbe mitame, Rebbe says he's mitame, Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda mitayer, says he's tor. My love, let us suggest this. Rabbi Savar Mishum Avira, why does he say you're tame? Because Tumat Avir is the factor that matters when you go into Eretz Amim. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Mishum Gusha, that he thinks that it's because of the Tumah of the ground. The way that the Mefaresh over here explains it is that he went in with one of these items that were enclosed on the sides and on the bottom, but were open on top. So as far as the din of Ohel, there is no problem of being Ma'ahil on something else, because just like the enclosure is protective of you inside of it, so too it's Chutzeitz. It divides between you and the ground below. And so because of that, you're not tamei tumat ohel against the ground. Or, according to those in first year, where you'd have to actually come into contact with the ground, you're not in contact with the ground. So there's no issue. According to Balei Tosafot, even if the top was completely enclosed, you would still be tamei, because that's the way Tosafot explained it yesterday, that tumat avir is this super tumah, which means that even if you enter in an enclosure, because you went into the airspace, you are tamei. Whereas according to the Mifereish, you actually have to come into contact with the Avir, and therefore the Mifereish explains it that the top is open. So there is no Tumat of the Aretz below, because you have a Chatzitza between you and what's below. But in terms of Avir, you are in the airspace, and the air can enter into the box because it's open on top. So that's how the Mifereish explains it, that it's a box that's open on top, whereas Tosafot can even explain it in a case where you're completely enclosed, but because it's Tumat Avir has this quote-unquote superpower to affect you even better than Ohel, even in cases where Ohel would not be Mitameh, here it is Mitameh. So therefore, Rabbi says you're Tameh, because he holds that it's Avir that is the issue. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that it's Gush, it's the ground, and that's why you are Tor. Lo, the ground says you don't have to say that. Kulei Alma Mishum Gusha. Everybody agrees it's the ground that's the issue. But now, the question is not revolving around the Tumah, or the level of Tumah, but rather the enclosure that you're in. Mar Savar Oel Zaruk Shmei Oel. We're going to go with the majority view here, which is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that Oel Zaruk Shmei Ohel, a moving Ohel, is called an Ohel, and therefore you're still protected from the Tumah, because you are enclosed, whether fully enclosed according to the Balei Tosafot, or open on the top according to the Mefaresh. Either way, you have a chatzitza, you have something that separates between you and the ground. And because you have that, you are going to be tahor. Even though the item or the object that you're in is a moving ohel. It's an ohel, an enclosure, but it moves. Typically, an ohel has to be planted in a fixed location, and that's why it's an ohel, because it encloses you, but it is stationary. When it's moving, does that change the status of this item? Mar Savar, lo shmei ohel. And Rabbi holds, it's not an ohel, therefore the Tumah enters in and is mitameh you, and for that reason, you are tameh. So now, the difference they're suggesting now has to do with the nature of the ohel that is moving over here. And then the Gemara says, v'hatanya. The word v'hatanya in Shas has two possible meanings. The word v'hatanya, and this is the majority of the cases, v'hatanya is a hey, a sheila, and it's a question. V'hatanya, don't we have a braita that says, and the braita is going to come in and try to undermine the premise or the proposition that we made here. There are other instances, it's not infrequent, but there are many times in Shas, v'hatanya is what they call benichuta. Is that not that it's a question, but rather, v'hatanya is supportive of the previous statement. So generally, Rashi, throughout Shas, whenever there is v'hatanya, will mention that it is benichuta, when it is a support of the previous statement. Sometimes they even mention v'hatanya is a question, when it's unclear whether it is a question or a support. Over here, you have a machloket rishonim as to how to explain the v'hatanya. Is the v'hatanya over here questioning the previous statement? Or is the v'hatanya over here supportive of the previous statement? So we'll go with the mefaresh first. We'll explain it his way, which is v'hatanya is a question. And it's easy to see why it's a question over here. V'hatanya, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. We have a braita that brings Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda's position, who we just suggested that believes that an ohel that moves is a good ohel. Teva, Shim Lea Kelim, you have some sort of chest that is full of Kelim. Vizarka al Pnei Amet, and he jettisoned it, catapulted it, crossed the mate, so now it became an oil on the mate. Al Pnei Amet Boel, Tamea. Then he is Tame, because seemingly what's coming out of this, Breita, is that oil Zaruk, when the oil is moving, it does not provide the protective features that a normal ohel would protect. And therefore, the kelim that are crossing over the mate, that are inside a house, or inside some ohel, they now become tamei because they are not protected by the enclosure that they're found in. If it's stationary, then it's an ohel. And if it's an ohel that's stationary, it protects against tuma. Not only does it spread tuma, but it also is chutzetz. It protects against tuma coming there. So from this, you would conclude that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda believes that an ohel zaruk, lo shmei ohel, is not an ohel. Yet, you proposed before that the machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda was exactly on this point, that Rabbi believed ohel zaruk, lo shmei ohel, and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda believed that ohel zaruk, shmei ohel. It is called an ohel, and that's why Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda believed you were tahor when you entered into Eretz Amin b'shida teva migdal. But here we have a brightness suggesting otherwise, that Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda says when you have this ohel that jettisons across the pnei amet, then you have a problem here because it was mahil al hamet, and it's tamei, even though it's in an ohel, it's in an enclosure because lo shmei ohel. That's the question of the Gemara. And then the Gemara will continue, Ella. Ella and the Gemara typically, in Nazir we've seen exceptions to this rule, but throughout Shas, Ella means we are dropping the original thesis, and now we're going to enter a different thesis. We're changing our mind because of the question that was asked. And according to the Mefaresh, if the bright is a question here, it undermines the thesis that Yossi Bar Yehuda believes Ol Zaruk is Shmei Ohel. So now we have to come up with a different reason for the machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot read V'hatanya as supportive of the previous statement, which is V'hatanya is Benichuta. But then the word Ella would be incorrect. Because if the bright is supportive, why do you have Ella coming to teach you switch the original thesis and go to a new thesis? You don't have to switch anything. We have support for what you're saying. So if you look in the Tosafot, in the first Tosafot, in the wider lines down below, he says, Hachigasinan, vi bayitema. His girsa in the Gemara was not Ella, but rather e bayitema, which is here's an alternative answer. This isn't replacing the first answer, it's rather an alternate answer. And because he thinks v'hatanya benichuta is supportive, then he says, Ella doesn't belong there, but rather, ibaiteima, let me offer you another alternative explanation. Now, how is this supportive? V'hatanya over here, benichuta, has to do with the difference that Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda makes in the statement. He makes a statement or makes a differential between an ohel that was jettisoned across the pnei amet, where he says that the kelim inside are tmeim, versus a ohel munechet that was down or stationary where it would be considered to be an ohel. What Tosafot suggests over here, it's in the middle of the Tosafot of Atanya, says Perush Acher, is that Marsavar ol zaruk shenichnas Shida shebehema o adam molichim oto shmei oel lachotz ulavsik. Tosfot here makes a distinction that has halachic ramifications and actually reflects or is connected to the Gemara in Yoma that you quoted before, which is that oel, a moving oel, can be manifest in two ways. You can have a moving oel, which is what we've been discussing here, where it's shot across, jettisoned, catapulted. That's an oel zaruk, where it has no connection to the ground. You also can have an oel zaruk, which is an oel that's moving, but it has a connection to the ground because it's riding on something. It's riding on the back of a behema. Or today, it's on the back of a pickup truck. Somebody's carrying it, people are carrying it, and they are attached to the ground. Tosfot over here makes that distinction and says that's exactly what Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda is saying in the Braita. If the oel is jettisoned across where it has no attachment to the ground, lo shmei oel. On the other hand, where the oel is munechet, munechet doesn't mean stationary like I've explained to now, but rather means munechet is planted on something that is planted on the ground. It's walking, it's on the back of a person. It's on the back of a behema. It's on the back of a pickup truck. It has a connection to the ground because it's never left the ground. There he says, that's what Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda is saying. An oel zaruk that has no connection to the ground, lo shmei oel. But an oel zaruk that means it's a moving oel, but it's connected to the ground through whatever's moving it, that is considered to be a good oel. And that's what the Braita says. And that is supportive of what Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda said before. The reason that you are tahor when you're nichnas to Eretz Yamim is because you went in a shidam teva migdal that was riding on the back of a behema or was being carried by someone into Eretz Yamim, and therefore that ohel shmei ohel, and that's why you're tahor, and that's supportive of that position. That goes back to the Gemara in Yoma where they brought up the little kids to do the parad duma and to be tahorim. How they transported those children was on the back of a behema with a board across it, making an ohel. So even though it's a moving oel, it's a good oel because it's on the back of the behema, and the behema is grounded. Since the behema is grounded, therefore it's not an oel zaruk that's lav shmei oel, but rather an oel zaruk that is shmei oel. It's interesting, during Sukkot, I was looking through a sefer to discuss the kashrut of different types of Sukkot. And over there he discussed the difference between a sukkah on an airplane versus a sukkah on the back of a truck. And he says, is it kasher to have a sukkah, which is on the back of a pickup truck, on a boat, on certain transportation items, or the mitzvah mobile is taking a sukkah around? Are those sukkot kasherot? Or on an airplane or something that flies in the air? An open canopy, like your World War I type of planes that are flying, you have an open canopy plane. Can you make a, oh well, they're more theoretical, I would say, than practical, but here he discusses exactly this distinction that Tosafot makes. He says that by the case where it's riding on the back of the pickup truck, or it's moving but it's attached to the ground, even though that's an oel zaruk, it's shmei oel, as a din of oel, and therefore according to our view of sukkah, where it can be a sukkah, can be an oel arai, it doesn't have to be an oel keva, that would suffice and it would be a kosher sukkah. On the other hand, the sukkah on the plane, even though it seemingly is the same thing as moving on a pickup truck over there, that is an oel zaruk, shalosh mei oel, because it's not grounded. It does not have, it's not connected to the ground. Obviously, if the plane's on the ground, then it'd be fine. So, but when the plane's in the air, it's losh mei oel, and it's not kosher as a sukkah. So here, this distinction that Tosafot makes, right, has halakhic ramifications with regards to oel in different locations, meaning whether you're grounded or not grounded. But because of that, he sees the Braita as being supportive of the previous position. And then we move on to the next line of the Gemara. It's Ibaitema. Let me give you a different alternative. Not, I don't have to change what I said before. What I said before is totally fine. But let me at least offer you a different alternative. Ella. So now, according to Mifresh, Ella is because we just asked a question from the Braita. So now we're going to propose a different way to explain the Machloket Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. According to Tosafot, Ibaitema, this is another alternative. It's not replacing the first. Ela dukule ama mishum avira. Everybody thinks the tumah is mishum avira. Umar sever came into lo shchicha lo gazre be rabbonon. Since it's not a common case, the chamim are not gozer. Umar sever af agav lo shchicha gazru be rabbanan. Even though it's not shchiach, they rabbanan were gozer. The case is you're entering in a shida teva migdal. Is that a typical way to enter into Eretz Amim? The answer is no. even though it's an atypical way to enter, what Rabbi says is, the Chachamim goes there, Tuma, in the Avir of Eretz Amim, and that's irrespective of how you got there. Doesn't matter if you got there in the normal way or you got there in an unusual way, you are Tamei. Because Rabbi Yehuda says that typically when it comes to Gzirot Chachamim, the Gzirot Chachamim revolve around the common cases. Gzirot are put in place because they're trying to prevent the problems arising from common cases. They usually are not addressing these outlandish or far-fetched cases. And the case of going in, Veshita Teva Migdal, is one of those cases where it would be far-fetched and the Gzira would not apply. V'hatanya. Now everybody agrees here, V'hatanya is Binichuta. Both the Mefarash and Tosafot here say V'hatanya, the Breiter is supportive of what we just said. They argue about how it's supportive, but they both agree here that the Tam V'hatanya is not a question, but rather a proof to the previous statement. Hanichnas le'Eretz Amim, B'shida Teva U'Migdal. Someone who goes in this manner, Tahor, Bikaron, Ubisfina, Ubiskaria, Tamei. So if you go in with the Shida Teva Migdal, which is in these types of enclosures, but things that are usually used to store items in them, whether it's an amwar, a chest, some sort of box that you're entering in, there you are Tahor. If you go in Bikaron, a wagon, Bisfina, in a boat, Obiskaria, which is a large boat. The Iskaria is referring to the mast, the large mast. So it's a large boat. Tamei, there you are, Tamei. So now, what is the proof? So the way that the Mefarash reads it is that this is supportive of the fact that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda believes in cases where it's unusual, we weren't gozer. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this Braita, distinguishing between Shida, Teva, and Migdal, where he says, no go in terms of Tumat Amim because it's an unusual way to enter, versus Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria, which are normal ways to enter Eretz Amim, over there you are Tamei, and that's how the Mefarash says it's supportive of the statement. The other hand, Tosafot focuses on the other side of it, which is that the support from the Braita is that even though Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is Mitaher, he still agrees that it's Tamei by Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria. So that he focuses on the second half of the Braita, which is, we know that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says you're Tahor. But now we just said the reason you're Tahor is because it was an unusual case. The Braita proves that in normal circumstances, even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes you are Tamei. The proof is the fact that a Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria are Tmeim. So Tosafot focuses on the normal part being Tamei as the proof from the Braita. The Mefarash focuses on the unusual part of the Braita, the Shida, Teva, and Migdal, as being the proof that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes when you go in an unusual fashion, you are Tahor. The question of which is the default, and then what is the Braita helping you with? According to the Mefarash, the default is you're a Tamei when you enter into Eretz Amim. Where are you, Tahor? Shida Teva Migdal. That's supportive of the fact that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes in unusual cases you are Tahor. Then Tosafot says, no, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's position is default Tahor. You just stated now that's only in unusual circumstances. So he says here, the Braita proves that in normal circumstances, you, even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you are a Tamei, and that's what's proved from the Braita. Then the Gemara says, V'ibai Tema. So according to Tosafot, this is a third answer. According to the Mefarash, this is a second answer. Hacha Shema Yotzi Rosho Virubo L'sham. We are afraid that you are going to stick your Rosh and Rove outside of the means of transport, and then you're going to become Tamei. Pligid, that's what they argue about. That Rabbi believes that we worry about you sticking your head and the robe of your body outside the Shida Teva Migdal. And that's why he makes you Tamei. It's a Gzeirah that you're Tamei. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, we don't worry about that. People don't act in that way. We don't worry about it. And therefore, he is Tahor. Vatanya. And again, here, Vatanya is Benichuta supportive of this. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer. It's explicit that it's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda as opposed to the previous Braita, where seemingly it is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's position, because he's the one who would differentiate in such a manner. Here it's clear that it's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nichnas le'Eretz Amim, B'shida Teva Migdal, Tahor, Ad, Shiyotzi L'Sham Rosho, and the way we have an argument is Orubo, but both Mefarash and Tosafot have a Girsa L'Sham Rosho Urubo, that you have to take out your Rosh and your Rov, which means that as long as you're inside of the Shida Teva Migdal, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says you are fine, that it's a good OL. And until you literally stick Rosho Verubo out, there is no problem. And so based on that, it is a OL. And what the Mefarash says and Tosafot says the same thing, that everybody says, Kulyama Mishum Gusha. Everybody agrees here that the problem is Gush, that the land is Tameh, the Avir is not Tameh. Ulukulyama Nami, Ol Zaruk Shmei Oel. A moving Oel is considered to be an Oel. So as long as you're inside of the Shida Teva Migdal, you are fine. Because according to Tosafot, you're completely enclosed, and you're not being ma'ahil on the Gush, because in the laws of Tumatameit, that would not be considered an OL, because you are enclosed and separated. There's a chatzitza between you and the ground. According to Mefaresh, even if the top of the Shade of Migdal are open, doesn't matter, because the Gush below you is the problem, and you have a chatzitza, the floor below you is a chatzitza between you and the ground. So now, you, inside of this Shida Teva Migdal, when you enter in Sayyamim, you are completely Tahor. But given the fact that you are Tahor, why does Rabbi say you're Tameh? That's a Gezeira Otu. We're afraid that you're going to stick Rosho Verubo outside the Shida, Teva, and Migdal. So because we're afraid you're going to stick your head out, we make a Gezeira that you're Tameh. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you are Tahor until you do stick your head out. The way that the Mefaresh reads, this is Vatanya de Mesayatele Rabbi Yossi, Enu Metameh, Achiyotzi Rosho Verubo. What the Braita proves here is that you're not Tameh until you physically come out of the Shida Teva Migdal. As long as you're inside of it, the implications are that you are Tahor. The Mefaresh does read the issue, which is the Braita that we brought before. We brought a Braita before that said that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that in Ohel Zaruk, Lo Shmei Ohel, that when you throw the Ohel across the Pnei HaMeit with the Kelim inside of it, the Kelim are Tmeim. That shows you that Ohel Zaruk, Lo Shmei Ohel, according to the Mefaresh. Now the Mefaresh is in a bind, because before he explained there that that's Ohel Zaruk is Lo Shmei Ohel, and all of a sudden over here he's saying that an Ohel Zaruk is Shmei Ohel. What do we do with that? So he says, because you jettisoned that Teva across the Pnei HaMeit, you took away its Shem Ohel. But Kevin de Zorka, Kamapikle Mitorat Ohel, Meshavile Torat Kli. The fact that you threw it changes its status from an Ohel into a Kli. So what the Mefresh is suggesting here, and almost in a sense similar to what the Balei Tosafot distinguished before, but for different reasons. He says that if you throw an object, when you throw the object, you change it from an Ohel into a Kli. On the other hand, if you're moving an object, and I'm assuming that's what he means over here, because otherwise he'll have the same problem in Eretz Amim, that the Sheda Teva Migdal is not being jettisoned and thrown, it's being moved along. And since it's an Ohel Zaruk, in that sense it is Shmei Ohel. So he'll end up with the same distinction as Tosafot, but for a different reason. Tosafot is never faced with this problem, because Tosafot distinguished in the beginning between an Ohel Zaruk, which is detached from the ground, that was Tameh back there when it went across the Pnei HaMeit with the Kelim, versus a case where you're carrying the Sheda Teva Migdal. In that case, it's not called an Ohel Zaruk, and that's the case over here. So he doesn't have this problem that the Mefaresh has. The Mefaresh, with that problem, then tries to explain it, and almost in a sense comes to the same conclusion as Tosafot, but deriving for a different reason, which is that it depends on how you are treating the Ohel, which is, are you treating it like a Kli, or are you treating it like an Ohel? Again here, Ratanya, the Mefaresh and Tosafot disagree about what the Braita is helping us with. According to the Mefaresh, it's once again helping us to prove that Rosh Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that in these circumstances you are Tahor. Again, the default is you're Tameh, and this proves to us that in these certain circumstances you are Tahor. So what is that? In the case before we said, oh, the fact that you came in an unusual manner, that is Tahor, and we proved that from the Braita. Here too, what the Mefaresh says is, because you're in the Sheda Teva Migdal, you're Tahor, because Rabbi Yossi says you only become Tameh when you exit, implying that as long as you're inside, you are Tahor. So again, Mefaresh consistently says that the proof from the Braitot are to show you the Tahor side. These two Braitot came to show you that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes you're Tahor in an unusual circumstance. You are Tahor when you stay inside the Shida Teva Migdal, you don't go Rosh Shul Ruba outside. But then here, Tosafot in both instances says that the default is Tahor for Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and both Braitot prove to you that he says you're Tameh in certain circumstances. In the first bright, they prove that you're Tameh when you go in a Karon, Sfina, or Iskaria, where you went in a normal fashion. And in this bright, the deal he makes is that, oh, you went in a Shida Teva Migdal, that's where Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, only after you go Rosh Ruba out are you Tameh. Implying that if you went in a Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria, Even if you didn't stick Rosho Verubo out, you would still be Tameh. So Tosafot sees this almost as a continuation of the previous answer, which is, where are we Choshesh for you sticking out or not sticking your head out? In the case of the Karon, the Sfina, and the Iskaria, it's very common for a stick your Rosho Verubo out, because they are open forms of transportation. You're in the wagon, you're in the boat, so it's very likely you'll lean over, you'll look out. In the case of Shida, Teva, Migdal, you're in an enclosure where it's very hard for you to get access to the outside. When you leave, you're literally leaving. It's not like by accident you're going to stick Rosho Verubo out. Generally, when you're leaving there, you're leaving because you're going out completely. So he says, that's the difference. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says, by Shida, Teva, Migdal, there's no Gzera of Rosho Verubo because nobody goes out. It's not easy to get out. If you're going out, you know you're going out. Whereas by the Sfina, the Karon, and the Iskaria, where it might be unbeknownst to you, you'd be leaning over, you'd be looking over, because that's a common type of activity you would do on these items. There we are, Gozer, according to Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. So again, Tosafot focuses on the Tamei side of the picture. Why are you Tamei in those instances? Versus the Mifaresh is focusing on the side where are you Tahor? And it's possible here that according to the Mifaresh, that in the case of Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria, that if you didn't stick your Rosh Ovarubo out, you'd still be Tahor, according to the Mifaresh, because he was never Gozer about Rosh Ovarubo, and he doesn't distinguish between a Teshida Teva Migdal versus a Karon, Sfina, and Iskaria, versus Tosafot, who clearly makes a distinction between them and says that it has to do with the ease of access from each of these items, and thinks that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda would make that distinction even in this latter answer, similar to what he said in the previous answer. For now, the Gemara goes on and says, from our Mishnah, it says, Matchil umuneh miyad. It says that after you go through these tumult that are not okir, do not undermine your nizirut, then you go on and count. Amar Rav Chista, lo shanu ela b'nizirut mu'etet. It's only true when you're talking about a small nizirut. Aval b'nizirut merubeh misalek na misalkin leh. But in a larger nizirut, the days count. Over here, Rav Chista is addressing the case of a mitzora. In the case of a mitzora, Rav Chista says here that the Yemei Chalutin, when you are a full-fledged mitzora, our Mishnah says those days don't count towards your nizirut. In the process of Tara, what's called Yemei Gemaro, the week between the time that you start the Tara process and you finish the Tara process, also do not count towards your nizirut. On that, Rav Chista says that's not totally true. It depends how long your nizirut is. If you had a short nizirut, then you're right. Those days do not count towards your nizirut. On the other hand, if you have a longer nizirut, those days do count towards your nizirut. So now, the distinction is somewhat obvious, which is that at the end of the Tara process of the mitzora, on the day, first day he starts his Tara process, as well as the seventh day that he does his Tara process, he shaves his entire body, including his head. That means that he shaved his hair, he no longer has se'ar. We know that the minimum growth needed for se'ar is 30 days. So now, if that's the minimum shiur, and you took a nizirut mu'etet, nizir mu'etet means the rest, stam nizirut is 30 days. So there's no way that the days of you being a mitzora can count towards a nizirut, because in the end, you by definition have to grow your hair for 30 days after you finish tarat mitzora. So you're going to have to do 30 days afterwards no matter what, and that means that the days can't count towards your nizirut, because you have to do those 30 days afterwards. On the other hand, by nizir merubeh, when you're talking about a long nizirut, over there would be a distinction that you could make, which is, if you have sufficient days afterwards that are 30 days remain, even if you count the days during your time that you were a mitzora, and you still have 30 days afterwards, then you're fine. And you could then argue, that what Rav Chista says, is that, say for instance, you had a nizirut that was 100 days long. You began your nizirut, you completed 20 days of it. Then you became a mitzora, became tahor from a mitzora, and after that period, you still have 30 days left from the 100 days. It means you had 20 days before the tzarat. That means you had 50 days while you were at the mitzora, and then you have 30 days afterwards. What Rav Chista suggests over here is that those 50 days in the interim when you were a mitzora should count towards your nizirut, because you still have sufficient 30 days afterwards that your hair is going to grow back, and you're fine. So that's what he says here. He suggests that, which our Mishnah says, that Yemei Chalutin and Yemei Gemarot don't count towards your Nizirut. That's only true when you have a small Nizirut, not when you have a large Nizirut. The Gemara says, is that really true? Meitiv Rav Shravya. Matchil umunemiyad, ve'imi vatelbehen et akodmim. The Gemara seemingly here is quoting our Mishnah, even though this is not the language that is in our Mishnah. If you look in the Balei HaTosafot over here, Omeri, da'ano matnitin bevadai. This is definitely our Mishnah that we're quoting here. Ach ki hechlifa lashon. It just changed the language. It just says it in other words. It's saying the same idea as the Mishnah, just in other words. And that's what the Gemara is doing. It's quoting the Mishnah over here. It is not quoting a Braita, but it's literally our Mishnah, just worded slightly differently, which is, our Mishnah says, that when you finish the process of Tara, matchil umone miyad, you begin your count immediately, vein mevtel and tekodmi, but it does not undermine your first days. The implications of that seem to mean that you start counting immediately means that you are now restarting your count. It's not that you're just continuing your count from beforehand and through your tzarat, and then you just keep going. Matchil umone miyad sounds like you have a new beginning over here. It's not a completely new beginning, because the days before you were a mitzvah count. But it's a new beginning because you didn't count days during the time that you were a mitzvah. And that makes it sound like matchil umone miyad is in any case of a mitzvah. Why? Because he says, but my, what's the case in our Mishnah? Ilema minizirut mu'etet. If it's a case where it's a nizirut that has less than 30 days left, or his whole nizirut is only 30 days, then it's clear that he has to kabay gidul se'ar. He needs a minimum of 30 days to grow out his hair, and that is lacking over here. So there's no way that the Mishnah can say that, oh, motchel minimiyad and the yamim kodmim are counting. Nothing can count. You need 30 days to grow your hair, and that means you're basically restarting from the beginning. So that can't be the case of our Mishnah, where we're talking about a case of mu'etet. So the case must be the case of minizirut meruveh. We're talking about a large nizirut. V'ktani matchel minimiyad. And it says over there that he starts to count. Like we explained before, matchil umone miyad doesn't mean you just continue. Matchil umone miyad means that you're now starting a new count. Again, it's not a completely new count, because you count the days that before you were a mitzvah. But it means that there was some sort of suspension in the middle, and now you're restarting the count to continue what you did beforehand. But that doesn't sound like Rav Chisda. According to Rav Chisda, when you're talking about an azirut merubeh, you get to count the days of your tzarat. Our Mishnah seems to be clearly in contradiction with Rav Chisda's position. So again, in the example of what we would think in our Mishnah, if an individual took an Izirut for 100 days, he covered 50 days before he became a Mitzorah, he was a Mitzorah for 20 days, and then he wants to start his count again. According to our Mishnah, you have the 50 days that you did before, you are suspended for the 20 days, on the 21st day, when you are now Tahor, you begin day 51 of your Nizirut. And that's what Motchil Umone Miyad. It's not a continuation from all the way through, but it's rather a new start built upon the 50 days from before. Rav Chisda suggests in that situation that you would count the 50 days, you would count the 20 days that you were a Mitzorah, and then on day 71, you would begin counting the 71st day of your Nizirut. And the problem is, Rav Chisda as an Amora, our Mishnah sounds not like Rav Chisda. So the Gemara says, "Hu motiv la, v'hu mefarik la." Rav Shravya raised the question, and he also answered the question. He says, "Benizirut bat chamishim yom." Depends. Nizirut merubeh can manifest itself in many ways. A nizirut mu'etet is a stam nizirut is 30 days. That's the minimum you can have for a nizirut. On the other hand, you can have a nazir merubeh. Can be 50 days, 100 days, 200 days, a year. It can be any number, but it will have different ramifications. And that's what he suggests over here. That our Mishnah is talking about one instance of nizirut merubeh. Rav Chisda is talking about a different instance of Nizirut Merubeh. The example that he brings is Bat Chamishim Yom. That means that it's a 50-day Nizirut. As Tosafot notes over here, 50 days is not important. It could be 40 days. It could be 60 days. It's about the circumstance rather than the number of days in the Nizirut, which is in a case like this. Diyotiv Esrin, he was 20 days of his Nizirut he completed. Vijalita Leve Tzarat. And now he became a Mitzorah. Megaleach Tzarato. He finishes up his tzarat, v'hoder yotiv tlaten yomim didazir. And then he goes back to counting his nizirut, and he had 30 days left. It was a 50-day nizirut, he did 20 before, he has 30 left. So he does 30 afterwards. So what does that look like? It looks like that his nizirut was suspended while he was in mitzvah. But the reason is not because it was suspended, but rather because, ta'it le gidil se'ar. The reason that he has to do the 30 days afterwards is because he needs a minimum of 30 days afterwards to grow his hair back. And therefore, by definition, the days of his tzarat don't count over here because they're not helpful towards counting. Even if you counted the days of his tzarat here, he did 20 days before, And now he has, say, 30 days, he's a mitzora, and you're going to count those, and now he's finishing his zirut. Doesn't help you. Because after he does the shaving to cleanse himself of the tzaraat, he now needs 30 days to grow his hair back. And he will have to do 30 days afterwards. And so basically what the difference between our Mishnah and Rav Chisda is, how many residual days do you have after your tzaraat? And that is, our Mishnah says, in the case where there are 30 or less days left to your nizirut, then you have to keep 30 days, motchel minat. The time that your mitzvah doesn't count. Because since you have 30 or less days left, the minimum you have to do afterwards is 30 days. You could argue that there is a nafka mina here based on what you're raising from what we learned before, which is what happens if he comes to mate to mata mate while he's a mitzvah, or afterwards. If you really believe that the count is continuing all the way through, and it's a technicality that needs the 30 days afterwards, then you could argue in that space afterwards, those are just makeup days to get the Seir to grow. And then maybe if he comes to Mate Tumata Mate, he's only Oker 30 days. And it doesn't ruin the whole Nezirut, it only ruins the 30 days because he's just waiting for Gidul Seir. Or, if you say that the time of Mitzorah doesn't count at all in those situations, then if he becomes to Mate Tumata Mate afterwards, that's Oker the entire Nezirut because that's part of the core Nezirut that he's saying. The Gemara seems to indicate here that it is the core Nezirut afterwards, even though it's for Gidul Seir. Because if it was simply for Gidul Seir and the days counted while it was a Mitzorah, and this is just a technicality, then again, you would have this Nafka Mina. So it seems like the Gemara says that the Din works this way. That if you have 30 or less days left afterwards, then the time period while you are a Mitzorah does not count at all. And then if you have more, in excess of 30 days, all the days that are in excess of 30 days, you can count those days while you were a Mitzorah. So to the extent, say you had 32 days left afterwards, you could take two of those days while you're a Mitzorah, and you would still need the 30 days afterwards to get to Gidul Seir. If you already got up to 60 days, then 30 of those days could be while you're a Mitzorah, the other 30 afterwards. So the bigger the number that you have left afterwards, the more time you could actually use that you while you were a Mitzorah. And that'll be the difference between Rav Chisda and the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a case where there are 30 or less days left, and that's why during the time period that you're a Mitzorah, it doesn't cover any ground for you. On the other hand, Rav Chisda is talking about when in Nezirut Merubeh, it's talking about a case where you have an excess of 30 days left afterwards. Anything in excess of 30 days left afterwards, then you can use the time that you were in Mitzorah to count those days to get you down to 30 days only that are left afterwards. So if it was 30 days, two you have to afterwards, you can use two from the time you're in Mitzorah, and then you have 30 days left. If it's 60, you can use 30 of those days while you're in Mitzorah, and the 30 days afterwards to finish. You just need a residual of 30 days afterwards. Anything else, you can use the time that you're in Mitzorah to count towards your Nezirut, and that'll be the distinction between our Mishnah and Rav Chisda, and we can reconcile them now, and they're not arguing anymore. Meitiv Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama here raises a case, you can see, very large Tosafot trying to explain the case. A lot of the explanation of this case will come up in 2-3 daf from now, which is how you deal with the Korbanot, because we're actually quoting Mishnah from Daf Nun Tet. And the question is a case where a person is a Nazir, and he runs into some problems. Problems that would be Oker or suspend his Nezirut. So for instance, a Nazir who becomes Tamei Tumat Tameit, that would be Oker his Nezirut. Or a Nazir who became a Mitzorah. When he becomes a Mitzorah, that suspends his Nezirut. The only problem here is that he doesn't know for sure if he's Tamei Tumat Tameit, or he doesn't know for sure that he is a Mitzorah Mukhlat. Now, how you don't know that you're a Mitzorah Mukhlat is a little difficult, because in general we have a principle by Safek Nigaim Lakel. If you have a safek nega, we go le kula. So over here, if he doesn't know, we should just say it's the kula. And you can see that in the Rosh here, he said, Sarachiyun, b'mesecha negaim, heichem ishkachat la safek mukhlat. How exactly do you come up with that scenario? So how the Rishonim explain it over here is that it's not that he has a safek as to whether the nega is really a nega, but it's a safek as to whether he was the guy. Same as the mixing up the babies in the hospital. There are two babies born, and then those babies are not sure which baby belongs to which family or which parents. And they get mixed up and now they don't know for sure which baby belongs to whom. Same thing over here. The Kohen saw two people. One of them he said is a Mitzorah. One of them he said is not a Mitzorah. Now they don't remember. They forgot which guy he said is Tamei, which guy he said is not Tamei. That's the nature of the Safek over here. And that's possible. That's a plausible Safek that you have. And there wouldn't be Safek Nigaim Lakel because there's no Safek in the Nega. The Nega for sure is Tamei. So it's a question of who the guy is. So there, it's not that type of Sefek Negeim Lakel. So he has both of these Sefekot, but he's also a Nazir. Now he has a problem, because he can't count his Nazirut B'Tara if he was really Tamei Tumat Tamei. He can't count as Mizrua B'Dara if he really was a Mitzora. Right, he's a Mitzora. It suspends, and he has to become Tahor from his Tzarat before he can count onwards. That's the scenario. Now, what he does is, this is what Meitiv Rami Bar Chama, Nazir, Sheyatamei B'Safek, he was Tamei Tumat Tamei B'Safek, Umuchlat B'Safek, and he's also Safek whether he was a Mitzora. Uchel B'Kodashim, Dachar Shishim Yom. In a case where he has a Stam Nizirut of 30 days, he's permitted to start eating Kodashim after 60 days. But his Nizirut will only terminate after 120 days. And then he'll be able to drink wine and be Metameh L'Metim, meaning that his Nizirut would have expired at that point in time. How does this work? The assumption here is that this Sfeikot arose after his first day of Nizirut. Say it was the first day of Nizirut, and on that same day, it was a really bad day for him. He had a Sfeik Tumat Ameit, and a Sfeik Mukhlat by a Mitzora. So now he's in a bind. What does he want to do? He wants to go now 30 days and finish up his Nizirut B'Tara and say, I'm done. Can he really do that? Because when he comes to the end of his Nizirut after the first 30 days, he says, okay, I'm done with my Nizirut. I want to go cut my hair for my Nizirut B'Tara. Say, wait a minute. How do you know that what you just did now or this shaving of your head right now is for your Nizirut B'Tara? Maybe you were Tamei, Tumat Tameit. If you're Tamei, Tumat Tameit, then you need to do your Korban Tumah, shave your head, and restart your count. So when you shave your head here on day 30, that's not the end of your Nizirut B'Tara. That's just completing your Nizirut B'Tumah. And now, only now are you starting to count your Nizirut B'Tara. So that's why you have to do another 30 days. Because of that Safek. So why does he have to wait his first 30 days in the first? So why doesn't he just shave his head right away? Because the Safek also exists that he's neither Tamei Meit nor a Mitzora. And he's a Nizirut B'Tara. And he can't cut his hair then. He needs the right to cut his hair. So he has to wait 30 days to clear the Nizirut B'Tara. But then that first shaving could be for his Nizirut B'Tumah. Or, the other possibility is that he's a Mitzora. Now, if he's a Mitzora, again, he has to complete his Tzarat and then count his Nizirut. Because the Tzarat, we're going to see later on, has to be taken care of first. And since it has to be taken care of first, the process of Tzarat Mitzora involves shaving your head twice. So now he gets to the first pit stop and he shaves his head. Maybe he was a Nizir B'Tara, he had to wait for 30 days. Or maybe he's a Mitzora. So he shaves his head now. So now he shaves his head for the first time. That's the first shaving for Tarat HaMitzora. Now he wants to go ahead and shave 7 days later to clear out the Mitzora. He can't do that. Because maybe he was a Nazir Tamei originally. And now the second 30 days are his Nazirut B'Tara. He can't shave his head. So he waits an additional 30 days to shave his head. So now when he waits that additional 30 days to shave his head, that shaving could be the second shaving he needs for the Mitzora. And if that's the case, he's only beginning his Nizirut B'Tara now, after 60 days, in those subsequent 30 days, up to day 90. Or, maybe he's both a Mitzora, and Tamei Tumat Tameit, and he has to deal with both of them. So in that instance where it's both of them, the first two shavings get granted to the Tarata Mitzora. So on day 30 and day 60 when he shaves his head, that was the first and second shaving of the Mitzora. Then he needs 30 days and waits and then shaves his head again. That'll be his Tiglacha Datuma. And that's 90. And then the last 30 days will be his Tiglacha B'Tara. So that's how you get to the fact that 120 days is the minimum amount before he can drink wine and shave his head. As far as eating Kodoshim, Nizirut B'Tara doesn't stop you eating Kodoshim. And even a Nazir Tamei is not precluded from eating Kodoshim. As a Tamei Mate, he is precluded, but there's no problem Mechusarei Kapara. Which is that the din of Mechusarei Kapara is only, as Tosafot points out here, this is Tosafot the Shitato, that Tumah Yotzei Migufo. Only Tumah that emanates from your body generates a condition of Mechusarei Kapara. And those instances, when you can't eat Kodashim until you bring the Korban. As the Rosh says over here, T'lo Mikrei Mechusarei Kapara Be'asor B'Kodashim Elamish Tumah Yotzei Alav Migufo. That's similar to the Shita of the Balei Tosafot. On the other hand, Nizirut B'Tumah, that tiglacha and the korbanot that you brought afterwards, even though it looks like mechusarei kapara, it's not, because the tumah here is an external tumah, not an internal tumah, and therefore you can eat kodashim once you're tahor, even though you haven't brought your korbanot. So in that case, you wouldn't have to wait so long. But the mitzora is your problem here. And we just said here, the minimum amount of time to be sure you've cleared the tzarat is 60 days. To order to be tahor from the tumata mitzora, on day 30, you shave your head. Day 60, you shave your head. Those are the two shavings of the mitzvah. That means that you only clear the safek of the tzaraat after 60 days. And that's what it says here, lachar shishim yom. After 60 days, imutar be'kodoshim. Now, as far as the korbanot are concerned, because in order to be tor from the process of mitzvah, as well as to begin the process of counting the nizirut b'tara, and in order to finish nizirut b'tara, you need to cut your hair, you need korbanot. We're not going to go into detail here about this issue, because that'll be brought up later on when the Gemara discusses this in the context of which it's brought, but just know that what they do is in every one of these tiglachot, he'll bring an olah and a chatat ha'of. The reason being that an olah can be brought as a nidava, and a chatat ha'of can be brought bisafek. So the combination of those two items, an olah and a chatat ha'of misafek, and there's also a day of Rabbi Shimon that you can bring an asham ala safek, those korbanot will be brought, and they will allow you, in each of those instances, to either complete the process of Tarat HaMitzorah, to complete your Nizirut and do a Tiglachat of Nizirut, because you just need some Damim, one Damim to do the Tiglachat on, or to finish up your Tiglachat HaTumah. So in each of those instances, you have an Olah there, plus Chatat of Misafek, which is the Qurban of a Nazir Tameh, as well as a Mitzorah Ani. And there the Gemara talks about you have to be Mafkir Nechasav, you'll have to give up all of his possessions in order to become like an Ani, and use the Chatat of as the vehicle. But there are ways to have korbanot brought at each one of these 30-day way stations in order that either he's completing his nizirut b'tara, he's completing the nizirut b'tuma, or he's doing the tarat ha-mitzorah. Again, the details will leave to daf nun tet when the Gemara itself discusses this issue. Tosfot over here deals with the 60 and the 120, which is interesting. He says, after 60 days, you can eat kodeshim. After 120 days, you're cleared out of your nizirut. He says the meaning of those is different. When it says the achar shishim yom here, it doesn't mean after 60 days, it means on day 60. Whereas the achar is me'av esrim yom, it means after 120 days, it means on the 121st day. And that is because Tosafot over here says that for the purpose of getting you back to eating kodeshim, we will actually be ma'amid the din al din d'oraita, and therefore not require you to finish off in nizirut to day 31, but rather let you finish on day 30. If you remember, that was a machloket of Matan Bar Pado back earlier in the Masechta. Both of them agree that midoraita, day 30, is the end of nizirut, because either miksate yom kekulo, or because the Torah only requires 29 days, and therefore you can bring your korbanot on day 30. So what the Tosafot says here is that the Chachamim granted him permission to finish after 29 days and bring his korbanot on day 30 and start the next 30 days right then. And again, so that means he'll finish on the first one on day 29, brings his korbanot on day 30, starts the next one, he'll be done on day 59, he'll bring his korbanot the next day, which is day 60, and he'll be able to eat on that day when he brings his korbanot on day 60. On the other hand, when it comes to the subsequent nizirot, the latter two 30-day periods, the latter 60 days, have nothing to do with tzaraat and eating kodeshim, they're all about keeping the nizirut. There he says, the chachamim ramamid divrayam, back to the ikar din, that means that you have to count 30 days, 31st day, bring a korban, start your count then, and then do another 30 days, and that means that you will only be cleared of your nizirut after completing a full 60 days, and then on day 120, you'll be allowed to then drink wine and be mitameh meitim. Tosafot here spends a lot of time explaining that there's a difference between the first set of 60, where we let you take the shortcut in the nizirut, versus the second 60, where you make you keep a full 30-day nizirut instead of cutting it off in the early part. And he says the difference between the first and the second grouping is the fact that in the first one we're trying to get you eat kodeshim. There's a reason to be mamidin on doraita to get you back to the ability to eat kodeshim. In the second half, it's a problem that you created for yourself, becoming a nazir. There it's really about nizirut, and nizirut, these gzirut are in place. Whether it means that we don't invoke mitzvah tayom kekulo, or does it mean that even though the 29th day is the end, we want you to wait to the end because of the fact when you say, Hare ani nazir shloshim yom, we don't want people to get confused with stam versus shloshim. So according to Bar Podovitz and Rav Matno, and that's why we make you keep the full nizirut in the second half versus in the first half. So that means that when it says zachar shishim yom, zachar me'av esrim yom, doesn't mean after 60 days, but meaning on the 60th day. All right, v'tani Allah, and we have a tosefta on that Mishnah, that all it does is talks about a larger period of time. That's true when you have a 30-day nizirut, that you do 30, 60, 90, and 120. Aval nizirut bat shana. If you had taken a nizirut that says, I'm a nazir for 1 year, Uchel b'kodeshim nachar shtei shanim. You eat kodeshim after 2 years. Shotei yayim et tamei lemeitim nachar abar shanim. Which is basically an extrapolation. It's the same math, it's just the ratios are changed because it's 1 year. So here, it's after 2 years you can eat kodeshim, just like after 60 days you can eat kodeshim. And after 4 years you can be mitamei lemeitim and drink wine, your nizirut is over, just like after 120 days it's over. It's just a multiple. There was 30 days, here it's a year. So now, this is the question that Rami Chama poses to Rav Chisto. If you tell me that when he's a mitzora, the days count, when it's a large nizirut, it should be sufficient with 3 years and 30 days. Because all he needs in the end is 30 days for the seyar to grow back. Because what he can do now is his tzorat. He was a safek mitzora. So the first shaving was for his first shaving of the mitzorah. Second shaving is for the second shaving of his mitzorah. But he has to leave a year interval in between because he might be a nazir tohor. That means after 2 years, he's finished off the safek of tzorat. And he now can eat b'kodeshim. He will now have to wait another year because maybe he's a nazir tohor, Ashav. Or maybe he's a nazir tamei. After that third year, he'll shave his head. And that clears all possibilities, which is that either is a mitzorah, you did the two shavings after year one and year two, and he was a nazir tameh, that's the shaving after year three. If in any of those were not true, he's already completed his nizirut betara. But now, if both of them were true, he's now starting up his nizirut betara after 3 years. Well, he was a mitzorah in the interim. What Rav Chisda says is when you're a mitzorah and you have plenty of time left, that counts towards your nizirut. That means that all you need to do at the tail end of those 3 years is 30 days for Gidul Seyar, and then you should be finished. Why is the Tosefta saying 4 years when it should say 3 years and 30 days? So that's the question that Rami Bar Chama poses on Rav Chisda. And then, now the Gemara will continue, but Od Meitiv Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi brings another question against this position of Rav Chisda. We'll stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Continue tomorrow with the question of Rav Ashi.